and gases found on and in the Earth and its atmosphere, and it only requires a knowledge of the laws governing the combination and adhesion of the various substances to enable a spirit to make a body in all respects similar to that of terrestrial man, and to clothe himself therewith, holding it in combination for a longer or shorter period at will, as yet except in the higher spheres, because it requires a high degree of development in the mental condition of the spirit before he can duly weigh and understand all the minute points and numerous laws of nature involved in the subject. They manufacture to a certain degree with the astral or lower life principle, but they could not continue to sustain that life by reason of the extreme difficulty in collecting this lower life principle, and when they had so animated the artificially made body it would be devoid of intelligence and reason, these attributes belonging exclusively to the soul, and neither man nor spirit can endow such a body with a soul that which alone can give it intellect and immortality. With men for a longer or shorter time, according to the power of the spirit to retain this material envelope in the complete state. Since who had acquired a knowledge of these things could also renew at will the material covering of their bodies, and make themselves practically live upon the earth forever, or they might disperse these material atoms and walk forth in the spirit freed from the trammels of the flesh, reconstructing the earthly body again when it suited them. Men are the Mahatmas, who by the knowledge of these and kindred secrets do possess many of the marvelous powers attributed to them. Far from them is in the application of the knowledge they have thus gained and the doctrines they deduce from it, and also as to the inadvisability of imparting it freely to men in the flesh, and the duty of withholding it from them as a dangerous thing. No knowledge given to any spirit or mortal, which may not be safely possessed by every other, provided they have the mental development to understand and apply this knowledge. The guide Ahimsaman was a native of the East and has been a student of occult subjects, both in his earth life and in the 2000 and more years that have passed since he left the earth, and this is his decided opinion, and he has seen both the origin and the practice of many of these ideas that are as yet new to the Western mind, while thus possessing the power to create a material body from the elemental atoms alone. Spirits of advanced knowledge seldom use this power, because for ordinary materializing purposes there is no need to exercise it. The emanations from the members of the materializing circle and the aura of the medium, which are already saturated with the necessary essence for the formation of a body, saving them both time and trouble, and simplifying the process as the buying a ready-made piece of cloth simplifies the making of a garment, instead of the tailor having to proceed first to grow the wool, then to spin it, and finally to weave it into cloth for himself before he can begin to make the garment. Nearly the whole of the material covering is used, so that to material sight the medium has vanished, although a clairvoyant may perceive the astral or spirit form still seated in the chair made use of, while the mental atoms have not been touched. Those who materialize themselves and those who assist the chief controlling spirit are ignorant of the means by which the results are obtained, just as many persons who avail themselves of the discoveries of chemistry and the articles manufactured by chemists are ignorant of how those substances are obtained. There is in all materializations an invisible head or director from a sphere greatly in advance of the earth, who may be called the chief chemist, and he passes his directions to a spirit strong in the power of controlling the forces of the astral plane and to others under him, who come in contact with the medium and direct the order of the materializations of personal friends of the sitters. Besides sometimes materializing and showing themselves to the circle going on now in the spirit world with the object of extending the knowledge of all these subjects, both among spirits and men in the flesh, and the ecclesiasticism, whether of the East or of the West, which would still shut up such knowledge within the precincts of the temple, may fight against this movement, but it will fight in vain. The power is too strong for them. Men are pressing into the avenues of knowledge on all sides and thronging round the doors which, sooner or later, must be opened to them. Neither can it be made the property of any class from such crumbs as come in its way, and surely it were better to impart the knowledge sought carefully and rejudiciously so it can be assimilated, than try to suppress the desire for it, or leave the hungry soul to gather it for itself in the garbage heaps of erring youth. Ever unless their tension is relaxed and he is suffered to wander in the pathways of knowledge to the utmost of his powers, well, then, that those who are as the sages of the race should respond to this thirst for light and knowledge by giving, through every channel and avenue which can be opened, the wisdom of the ages in such form as may make it the most easily comprehended. This planet is but a speck of the universal knowledge as is adapted to its state, and each hour requires that the expansion of the human mind shall be met by the expansion of its greeds and its resources, by the pouring in of fresh streams of light, not the suppressing of the old lest it should be too strong for the sight. 31. Why the spheres are invisible, spirit photographs. And now, Hasn, there is another point I wish to ask you about. I have frequently heard men on Earth say they want to know, if the spheres exist around the Earth and between them and the Sun, why is it that all men cannot see them, and why they cannot even see those spirits who are said to be actually in the room with them as my dwelling place? But I am unable to give an answer to the question. Explanations, but neither you nor these mortals who are unable to see the spirits would be much wiser after I had done so. My answer as free from technicalities as I can. If you have seen the photographs of unmaterialized spirits which have been obtained by certain mediums in the flesh sight, they present a semi-transparent appearance. Doors and windows, furniture, etc. show through the figures of the spirits. Of the amount of materiality possessed by an astral body, the first degree of spiritualized matter, fine network united by invisible atoms of a more etherealized nature, so sublimated in fact that they cannot be impressed upon the most sensitive plates now used by photographers. Photographed by the plates now in use, they do not possess gross enough atoms in the composition of their bodies, and have therefore to either materialize a body like an earthly one, or they may use another method which has been found successful and which is the one commonly used in the case of spirit photographs, where the spirits are visible to clairvoyant sight though invisible to materialize. This is simply described by saying these spirits make use of some of those astral envelopes or bodies that I have already described to you as forming from cloud masses of semi-material human atoms, astral shells which never served as the covering of any soul, and which are so plastic in their nature that spirits can mold them into their own likeness as a sculptor molds the clay, bearing a greater or less resemblance to the spirit, according as his will power and his knowledge enable him to stamp his likeness upon them. And though they are not strictly speaking the photos of the spirits themselves, yet they are nonetheless evidence of spirit power and of the existence of the spirit who has made use of them, because each spirit must himself stamp his own identity upon the plastic astral form, while more advanced scientific spirits prepare that form to receive the impressions. Photographs, the spirits really make a body from the more material atoms and clothe themselves in it, but probably not be able to distinguish between it and a true spirit man or woman, because the power of distinguishing between them is not yet developed in mediums. Neither, as a rule, do they know why a spirit that looks solid enough to them comes out on a photographic plate with a semi-transparent appearance. As matter as well as the grosser astral atoms, therefore it appears to them as a solid body with well-rounded, well-proportioned limbs, not as a transparent shadow of a spirit whose appearance may well give rise to the idea that returning spirits are mere shades, almost, in fact, empty shells. The real reason of the empty appearance being that, as I have said, the photographic appliances at present in use are not capable of transferring the whole spirit's form but only these grosser particles. Photographed, this transparent appearance does not exist. Lifelike and solid, that men turn round and say it, therefore, cannot be a spirit photograph at all. It must be nothing but the medium. Blind seekers, who in trying to grasp a subject so vast, so full of the most subtle difficulties, bring to bear upon it only the knowledge suitable for mundane things, and then conclude that they are able to decide finally so momentous, so scientific a question. Of may give a spirit whose appearance is like that of the traditional ghost. I will now show you how mortals may also see them as such, but to illustrate my meaning I will first ask you to imagine yourself back in your earthly body with no more powers of spirit sight than you possessed then. Thus liken the material and spiritual sight to two eyes, the one we will call the left, the other the right eye, and let the left stand for the material sight, the right the spiritual. Your back to the light and hold your forefinger in front of the right eye where it can be seen by that eye only, the left seeing only the wall before you shut the right eye and the finger is invisible, yet it is there, only not in the line of vision for the left, or material, sight. Now open both eyes at once and look at your finger and you will now see it certainly, but owing to a curious optical illusion it will appear transparent, a mere shadow of a finger, the wall being seen through it, and it may be likened to a ghost of a finger although you know it to be a solid reality. Thus you can imagine how a person whose material sight is alone open cannot see that which requires spiritual sight to discern, and how, when both the material and spiritual sight are open at the same moment the spirit may be visible but with the same transparent appearance as your finger had just now. Hence has arisen the popular idea of a ghost. A clairvoyant, looking at any spiritual object with the spiritual sight, does so with the material sight closed through the power of the controlling intelligence who directs that person's mediumship. Therefore to him or to her the spiritual object does present the appearance of a solid reality such as a material finger appears when seen by the material sight alone. No one still feel consider that even their material sight is dependent upon the material atoms which fill the Earth's atmosphere, and without which atoms there would be no light to see anything by. Mortals can see the stars even those which are not themselves suns distant as they are, because they are material objects from which the light of the sun is reflected. During the day the stars are still there, but the immense mass of material particles in the Earth's atmosphere being illuminated by the reflecting of the sun's rays from them, causes so dense an atmosphere of light that the stars are veiled and no longer visible to materialize atmosphere of illuminated atoms, and, behold, the stars are again visible at midday and surrounding ether of space, being free from such material particles, is quite dark and to reflect the sun's rays. Although the mortal would be nearer to the sun, yet its light is no longer visible to his material eyes, which can only see when there is some material object, however small, to reflect the light of the sun for him. Does man know that the light of the sun is traveling through the ether space to earth, only by reason and analogy, not by sight, for beyond the earth's atmosphere the sun's light is invisible to him. Moon to be only the light of the sun reflected from the moon's surface. And are each little atom of material matter floating in the earth's atmosphere is an infinitesimal moon to reflect the sun's light for man and brighten earth with the splendor of these reflections. So again those minute particles that are continually being thrown off into the atmosphere by the earth itself, are but the larger and grosser atoms enclosing or rather revolving round, minute spiritual germs that form a spiritual atmosphere around the earth and reflect for clairvoyance the spiritual elements of the light of the sun. The atmosphere forms what is known as the astral plane, and bears the same proportion of density to astral bodies that the material atmosphere does to mortal bodies, and the light from the spiritual elements of the sun striking upon these spiritual particles is the light of the astral plane by which spirits see. The material atmosphere of earth being visible to the material sight of mortals may exist around the earth, and between man and the material envelope of the sun without his being able to see them, by reason of the fact that his spiritual sight is closed and he can only see what is material. The spiritual spheres and their inhabitants are certainly more transparent and intangible to mortal sight than his finger appeared just now. That they exist and are as solid a reality as his finger, and are only invisible by reason of his imperfect sight, which is limited to material things of comparatively great density. 2. Through the gates of gold, my mother, my home in the land of bright day, I am joined by Benda. I was always fond of watching the clouds float over the sky and shape themselves into pictures suggested by my thoughts. Since I reached the second sphere of the spirit land my skies have always had clouds floating over them, lovely light fleecy clouds which shape themselves into a thousand forms and take on the most lovely shades of color, sometimes becoming rainbow hued and at others of the most dazzling white, and then again vanishing away altogether. I have been told by some spirits that in their skies they never see a cloud, all is serene clear beauty, and no doubt it is so in their lands, for in the spirit world our thoughts and wishes form our surroundings. To be seen in my sky, at times veiling and softening its beauties and making cloud castles for me to enjoy. Ere I obtained my little home in the morning land I began to see between myself and my cloud pictures a vision which, like the mirage seen in the desert, hovered on the horizon, distinct and lifelike, only to melt away as I gazed of the ethereal gate of wrought gold, such as might be the entrance to some fairy land. A clear stream of water flowed between myself and this gate, while trees so fresh, so green, so aerial, they seemed like fairy trees, arched their branches over it and clustered at the sides. Did I see this vision? And one day while I was gazing at it, my father came unnoticed by me and stood by my side. He touched my shoulder and said, "Francesco, that gate is inviting you to go nearer and see it for yourself. Within those gates that your new home is waiting for you. You might have gone some time ago into those circles which lie between you and it, had not your affection for this little cottage made you content to remain in it. And see if the wonders of that new land will not still more delight you. I am, as you know, in the third sphere, which will, therefore, be still above you, but the nearer you approach to me the more easily can I visit you, and in your new home we shall be much oftener together." So for a little time. Incredible that I should be able so soon to pass those gates. Then, taking my father's advice, I bade a regretful adieu to my little home, for I grow much attached to places which I live long in, and set forth to journey to this new country. The gate shining before me all the time, not fading away as it had done before. The round globe as with the planets, you do not see the objects on the horizon vanishing in the same way, and earth and sky meeting at last as one. Sky is a vast canopy overhead, and the circles which are above you seem like plateau resting upon mountain tops on your horizon, and when you reach those mountains and see the new country spread out before you, there are always on its horizon again more mountains and fresh lands lying higher than those you have reached. Also you can look down on those you have passed as upon a succession of terraces, each leading to a lower, less beautiful one, till at last you see the earth plain surrounding the earth itself, and then beyond that again, for those spirits whose sight is well developed, lie another succession of terrace-like lands leading down to hells into circle and sphere into sphere, only that between each sphere there exists a barrier of magnetic waves which repels those from a lower sphere who seek to pass it until their condition has become in harmony with the higher sphere. Gates I passed through several circles of this second sphere, whose cities and dwelling places would have tempted me to linger and admire them had I not been so eager to view the fair land which was now the goal of my hopes. I knew, moreover, that I could at any time on my way to earth stop and explore those intermediate lands, because a spirit can always retrace his steps if he desires and visit those below him. I reached the top of the last range of mountains between me and the golden gates, and saw stretched out before my eyes a most lovely country. Trees waved their branches as in welcome to me and flowers blossomed everywhere, while at my feet was the shining river and across it the golden gates. Joy in my heart I plunged into that beautiful river to swim across, its refreshing waters closing over my head as I dived and swam, dripping with water, but in a moment I found my clothing as dry as could be. And what was still stranger, my grey robe with its triple bordering of white had changed into one of the most dazzling snowy luster with a golden girdle and golden bordering. At the neck and wrists it was clasped with little plain gold clasps, and seemed to be like the finest muslin in texture. Looked and looked again, and then, with a trembling, beating heart I approached those lovely gates. As my hand touched them they glided apart and I passed into a wide road bordered by trees and flowering shrubs and plants of most lovely hues like flowers of earth, indeed, but the words of mine can convey to you. The waving branches of the trees bent over me in loving welcome as I passed, the flowers seemed to turn to me as greeting one who loved them well, at my feet there was the soft green sward, and overhead a sky so clear, so pure, so beautiful, the light shimmering through the trees as never did the light of earthly sun. Blue and purple hills and the gleam of a fair lake, upon whose bosom tiny islets nestled crowned with the green foliage of groups of trees, skimmed over the surface of the lake filled with happy spirits clad in shining robes of many different colors, so like to earth, so like a my beloved southern land, and yet so changed, so glorified, so free from all taint of wrong and sin. Flower-girt road a band of spirits came to meet and welcome me, amongst whom I recognized my father, my mother, my brother and a sister, besides many beloved friends of my youth, white and green colors, which they were waving to me, while they strewed my path with masses of the fairest flowers as I approached, and all the time they sang the beautiful songs of our own land in welcome. their voices floating on the soft breeze in the perfection of unison and harmony. Just overcome with emotion, it seemed far too much happiness for one like me. It seemed turned to earth, to her who was of all the most dear to me, where all was so dear, and I thought, alas that she is not here to share with me the triumphs of this hour, she to whose love more than to any other thing I owe it. I suddenly beheld her spirit beside me, half asleep, half conscious, freed for a brief moment from the earthly body and borne in the arms of her chief guardian spirit. Her dress was of the spirit world, white as a bride's and shimmering with sparkling gems like dewdrops. I turned and clasped her to my heart, and at my touch her soul awoke and she looked smilingly at me. Then I presented her to my friends as my betrothed bride, and while she was still smiling at us all, her guide again drew near and threw over her a large white mantle. He lifted her in his arms once more, and like a tired child she seemed to sink into slumber as he bore her away to her earthly body, which she had left for a time to share and crown this supreme moment of my joy. My joy, I felt it hard to let go, to think I could not keep her with me. But the thread of her earthly life was not yet fully spun, and I knew that she like others must travel the path of her earthly pilgrimage to its end. My mother, whom I had never seen since I was a little child, caressing my hair and covering my face with kisses as though I had been still the little son whom she had left on earth so many, many years ago that his memory of her had been but dim, and that the father had supplied the image of both parents in his thoughts, almost buried in the roses and jasmine which clustered over its walls and twined around the slender white pillars of the piazza, forming a curtain of flowers upon one side. It seemed, how much beyond what I desired. Its rooms were spacious, and there were seven of them, each typical of a phase in my own character or some taste I had cultivated. I was upon the top of a hill overlooking the lake which lay many hundreds of feet below, its calm waters rippled by magnetic currents and the surrounding hills mirrored in its quiet bosom, and beyond the lake there was a wide valley. As one looks down from a mountain top to the low hills and the dark valley and level plains below, so did I now look down from my new dwelling upon a panorama of the lower spheres and circles through which I had passed, to the earth plane and again to the earth itself, which lay like a star far below me. I thought as I looked at it that there dwelt still my beloved, and there yet lay the field of my labors. I'm since gazing out on that lone star, the pictures of my past life floating in a long wave of memory across my daydream, and with all my thoughts was interwoven the image of her who is my guiding star. The room from which I could see this view of the distant earth was my music room, and in it were musical instruments of various kinds. Flowers festooned the walls and soft draperies the windows, which required no glass in their frames to keep out the soft zephyrs of that fair land. A honeysuckle, that was surely the same sweet plant which had so rejoiced my heart in my little cottage in the morning land, trailed its fragrant tendrils around the window, and on one of the walls hung my picture of my darling, framed with its pure white roses which always seemed to me an emblem of herself. Here, too, I again found all my little treasures which I had collected in my dark days when hope seemed so far and the shadow of night was ever over me. The furniture was like that of earth, only more light in appearance, more graceful and beautiful in every way. There was a couch which I much admired, half-kneeling figures of wood nymphs, carved as it would seem from a marble of the purest white and even more transparent than alabaster. Clasped hands formed the back and the upper and lower ends. Their heads were crowned with leaves and their floating draperies fell around their forms in so graceful, so natural a manner, it was difficult to believe they were not living spirit maidens. This couch was of a texture like swan's down, only it was pale gold in color, so soft was it, it seemed to invite one to repose, and often have I lain upon it and looked out at the lovely scene and away to the dim star of earth with its weary pilgrims, its toiling souls. The next apartment was filled with beautiful pictures, lovely statues, and tropical flowers. Of a tree then a room, the pictures being collected at one end of it and the statues and flowers forming a foreground of beauty that was like another and larger picture. Grotto with a fountain playing, the water sparkling like diamonds and rippling over the sides of the smaller basin into one larger still, with a murmuring sound which suggested a melody to me. Near this grotto was one picture which attracted me at once, for I recognized it as a scene from my earthly life. It was a picture of one calm and peaceful evening in early summer when my beloved and I had floated on the quiet waters of an earthly river, and glowing in the west was sinking behind a bank of trees, while the grey twilight crept over the hollows through the shade of the trees, and in our hearts there was a sense of peace and rest which raised our souls to heaven, and recognized many familiar scenes, which had likewise been full of happiness for me and in whose memories there was no sting. Also many pictures of my friends, and of scenes in the spirit world. Windows I could behold another view than from my music room, showed those lands which were yet far above me, and whose towers and minarets and mountains shone through a dim haze of bright mist, now rainbow-hued, now golden, or blue, or white. I loved to change from the one view to the other, from the past which was so clear, to the future that was still dim, still veiled for me. In this picture salon there was all which could delight the eye or rest the body, for our bodies require repose as well as do yours on earth, and we can enjoy to rest upon a couch of down and by our labors as much as you can enjoy the possession of fine furniture bought with gold earned by your work on earth. But for the entertainment of my friends, and here again, as in the lower sphere, there were tables set out with a feast of simple but delicious fruits, cakes, and other agreeable foods like earthly foods, only less material, and there was also the delicious sparkling wine of the spirit world which I have before mentioned was full of books recording my life and the lives of those whom I admired or loved, books upon many subjects, the peculiarity in them being that instead of being printed they seemed full of pictures, which when one studied them appeared to reflect the thoughts of those who had written the books more eloquently than any words. Men who inhabit the sphere above, and here have I sat, and inscribed upon the blank pages of some book laid open before me, poems to her who filled the larger half of all my thoughts. Room we passed out to the garden, my father saying he would show me my chamber of repose, after our friends were gone. Here, as in the house, flowers were everywhere, for I always loved flowers. They spoke to me of so many things and seemed to whisper such bright fancies, such pure thoughts. To overhang the lake, especially at one secluded corner which was fenced in with a bank of ferns and flowering shrubs and backed by a screen of trees. This nook was a little to the side of the house and soon became my favorite resort. The ground was carpeted with soft green moss as you have not on earth, and flowers grew all around it whereon I loved to sit and look away to the earth, and fancy where my beloved one's home would be. Across all those millions of miles of space my thoughts could reach her as hers could now reach me, for the magnetic cord of our love stretched between us and no power could ever shut us out from each other again. Admired all, my friends led me back to the house and we all sat down to enjoy the feast of welcome which their love had prepared for me. A feast that was. How we proposed the progression and happiness of each one, and then drank our toast in wine which left no intoxication behind, no after reckoning of shame to mar its refreshing qualities. How delicious seemed this fruit, these numerous little delicacies which were all the creations of someone's love for me. Surely wake. At last all my friends left except my father and mother, and by them I was conducted to the upper chambers of the house. They were three in number, friends as might come to stay with me, and both were most prettily furnished, most peaceful looking. The third room was for myself, my own room, where I would retire when I desired to rest and to have no companion but my own thoughts. He most and filled me with more astonishment than anything I had yet seen, was the couch. It was of snowy white gossamer, bordered with pale lilac and gold, while at the foot were two angels, carved, like the wood nymphs, out of the dazzling white alabaster I have vainly tried to describe whom I had seen, and their heads and extended wings seemed almost to touch the roof of my room. And the pose of these two most lovely figures was perfect in its grace. To hover over the bed as though they had but just arrived from their celestial sphere. Man wearing on his head a helmet and bearing in his hand a sword, while the other hand held aloft a crown. His figure was the perfection of manly beauty and grace, and his face with its perfect features so firmly molded, expressing at once strength and gentleness, had to my eyes a look of calm regal majesty that was divine. Was small and more delicate in every way. Her face was full of gentle, tender, womanly purity and beauty. The eyes large and soft even though carved in marble, the long tresses of her hair half veiling her head and shoulders. Her hand held a harp with seven strings. The other rested upon the shoulder of the male angel as though she supported herself with his strength, while the lovely head was half bent forward and rested upon her arm, and on her head she wore a crown of pure white lilies. Look upon her face was one of such exquisite sweetness, such maternal tenderness, it might well have served for that of the Virgin Mother herself. The expressions of both were the most perfect realization of angelic beauty I have seen, and for some moments I could but gaze at them expecting them to melt away before my eyes.